Welcome to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm Graham Richmond, and this is your wiretaps for Monday, August 10th, 2020. Alex Brown joins me as always. How are things, Alex?
Very good. Thank you, Graham.
So you're not going to believe this, but I'm broadcasting from inside my car somewhere on the Adriatic coast of Italy. The place that I was staying for the night had really bad internet, so I had to jump in the car and find a spot where I could make a hotspot for my phone and get set up. So this is, we'll see what our producer Alex Kelly has to say about the sound quality, but who knows, cars are, you know, not a bad place, I guess, for sound, you know, stereos.
Always sound
good in cars.
Yeah, sounds very good to me.
All right. So yeah, how are things for you? Pretty good. Are you, I guess it's, this is like one of the best times of year in England on the coast there, no?
Yeah, no, we're getting some great weather. And yeah, tourism has opened back up in the UK, and we're in a big tourist area, so we've got to be careful with you know, COVID-19 and stuff. But we're in pretty good shape right now.
Good. Glad to hear it. So you've been kind of keeping an eye on the wires, and you're mentioning how, you know, kids are sort of, you know, getting off to school now at long last, or at least in terms of, you know, preterms and you know, a lot of it's virtual, but things are kicking into gear, and that means wait lists and all that stuff is kind of petered out a bit, right?
I mean, it seems to be, yeah, this week I've sort of seen a little bit of a change in tone in terms of the level of conversation and stuff. Most schools, it does suggest that most schools have sort of finished going to their wait lists. I wouldn't absolutely give up hope yet. I know under normal circumstances, when folks arrive at preterm and a few people are missing, the schools have to do a little bit of a recalculation and maybe admit one or two more folks. So I wouldn't completely give up if I'm still on wait lists. But yeah, it does seem that most of the schools have done the heavy lifting in that regard.
Yeah. And the other thing I was just thinking about is the fact that, you know, with things online, you know, there are probably a bunch of international students that for now it's fine, right? They're probably jumping in online. But I do wonder, maybe it's a separate issue, but I wonder, like, when these schools open up, let's say, you know, sometime in the first semester, in the second semester, they try to go back in person. I'm hoping that, you know, the visa issues and everything else kind of clears up by then, because there's still a lot of places where people are unable to get a visa to come to the U.S., for example. Not because of rules, just because of closures and stuff. So I just wonder, yeah, how it's all going to shake out if and when these schools go to in person and when that'll happen. So it's all a mystery.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of that's still up in the air. I think the way everybody seems to be dealing with it at this point, Graham, and you can agree with me or not, is basically schools are going to some kind of hybrid model, which facilitates those that aren't on campus able to join in a virtual environment. So basically creating a scenario where they haven't had to cross that bridge yet in terms of getting absolutely everybody on campus.
Yeah, that makes sense. So I guess we'll just see how this continues to play out. Other news, we've got the Kellogg admissions director Q&A went up on the site, and there are a bunch of other schools we've been releasing too, so stay tuned there. We just did our MBA Admissions Academy last week on recommendation letters, and we've got one coming up in about a week's time on data forms and all the odds and ends that go into an application that are often overlooked and left for the last minute. So join us for that. It's going to be a week from week from tomorrow, so Tuesday.
And also in that lesson, we're going to address the reapplicant issue.
Yeah.
For those that are applying or chose to apply in the extended round three rounds and are now looking to reapply, I think there are potentially some issues to discuss that separates that type of reapplicant from a more traditional reapplicant, i.e. they applied in rounds one or round two, and they have more time now to readjust and sort of develop their applications over for the following season. So yeah, it'll be interesting to address some of those additional issues, I think.
Yeah, looking forward to that. Other than that, we are still running a little survey for our podcast listeners. We've gotten a handful of responses. I'd love to see a few more. So please, if you have a moment, just go to bit.ly/clearadmitpodcastsurvey. all lowercase, all one word. And you can fill out the survey. It'll literally take you less than 5 minutes. And it just helps Alex and I to make sure that the podcast is meeting your needs. So give us some feedback. We'd love it. We also love your reviews and ratings. So continue to do so wherever you listen. Without further ado, though, we want to dive in. You've picked out, as usual, a handful of candidate profiles for our wiretaps portion of the show. So should we dig in?
Yeah, your use of the word handful is quite interesting. We picked three ApplyWire entries, but I think we got more than three survey responses. So I don't want people to think both equate to each other.
Yes, good point. Good point. Yeah, no, we've had a number of responses to the survey. I just always want more as a kind of data junkie. But yeah, there are three ApplyWire entries. And let's dive in and talk about Wiretaps candidate number one. So this person is looking at 8 schools, which include Berkeley, Cornell, Duke, the Indian School of Business, INSEAD, Stanford, Chicago Booth, and UVA Darden. They want to start next fall. This person's currently working as a marketing head at a deep tech startup, and they used to work as a product manager for a leading telecom operator in India. This person's post-MBA career goals involve consulting and tech, ideally a mix of the two, as they mentioned in their notes. And the companies that they're looking at are Accenture, A.T. Kearney, Bain, and McKinsey. The GMAT score is a 710, GPA 8.1, which is on a 10 scale. This person is from India, and that's how the grading system works there. 3 years of work experience to date. And they did say in the note, they said, "Thank you so much for the amazing podcast, Alex and Graham. They're my go-to source of information for tips on B-school applications." And they mentioned that they're an Indian male engineer from a tier one but non-IIT college. And they had a bunch of questions. And I know there was actually some really good exchanges that took place on the website, not just between you and this candidate, Alex, but even a community member was kind of offering some insights. So what do you make of this? Because this is an interesting case where the GMAT score is okay, but there's a lot of discussion about that 710 in the context of this candidate's profile. So what do you think of this candidate?
Yeah, and shout out to Greg the Egg for all his, I presume, feedback on this candidate. I thought he actually did a terrific job of highlighting some of the key issues on this candidacy. So that was very good. And we encourage our community to weigh in on these posts if they'd like to do so. It's sort of part of the ethic, right? We're all sort of in this together, helping each other, building that community and so on and so forth. So I actually thought that this candidate was provided some great feedback from Greg the Egg. So what I would say about this candidate, Graham, and you can obviously weigh in also, is 3 years of work experience. It does look like they've done some super interesting stuff, in sort of the cutting edge areas. You know, they're talking about artificial intelligence and just various other things that they're not just buzzworthy words, but they absolutely have terrific meaning, especially on things like marketing and so on and so forth going on into the future. And it seems like they've done very well. They've created product that sort of, saved their firm significant dollars. They can back that up and so on and so forth. So I reckon their work experience is actually very good. It's short in terms of it's 3 years. I'm not sure if that's 3 years now or 3 years to matriculation. But I'm less concerned about that, frankly, Graham. I think someone that's worked for 2 or 3 or 4, on the lower end of the number of years of experience, if they've showed real potential and real impact in that shorter time frame, I think lots of schools love that.
Yeah.
I'm not concerned about that in any regard. I as Greg suggested, you know, this candidate really needs to back up their assertions in terms of how successful they've been. Show, don't tell, right? That's very key to addressing this kind of stuff. And I think what the other thing that I really liked in this sort of discussion on ApplyWire is the candidate was embraced the feedback from Greg rather than getting a little defensive. And I thought that was terrific, right? I mean, that's how all this stuff should work.
Yeah.
So from that perspective, I'm a little bit keener on this candidate than maybe Greg is in terms of where they should be setting their aspirations. But unlike Greg, I would advise this candidate, if you think you can squeeze 20 or 30 more points out of that GMAT, then do it. The dilemma there is, can you do that and apply in round one? Because the trouble with someone that's coming from, I would suggest, an overrepresented population of candidates applying to business school, you know, strong tech focus, Indian male and so on and so forth, is you really do need to get your applications in early. So you're going to have this trade-off. Can you get the higher GMAT? Can you apply in round one? Can you do it with very well-developed applications so you're not rushing everything to try to get it all in? So that's a dilemma for this candidate. But as Greg suggested, have a punt this season. If it's not successful, continue to grow, learn, improve, then go after the top schools the next season if you're not able to get there this season. And I think that, again, is good advice for a candidate like this. You don't necessarily need to be applying to safety schools. You target the best or target the ideal schools for you. If you're on a great track, then you can afford to come back into the cycle again the following season if you don't hit this season.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, I think there was a lot of good feedback both on, you know, your end and Greg, our contributor on the site. I kind of also had a little bit of a stumble on the GMAT score and did want to see whether this person could boost it. I know this was their second test and that they'd already boosted it quite a bit to get to 710. But I do worry, you know, as they said, kind of male Indian engineer.
Yeah.
It just, they're going to tick a lot of boxes that are overrepresented. And so the test score becomes all the more important. I feel like I see this a lot in the applicant pool where someone's like, well, I'm either going to apply in the first round with the score I have, or I've got to wait until round two. And I mean, I hear them, although part of me feels like, you know, this is an important move in your life. And if you can make time to get it all done for round one, that would be great. Or even, I was actually toying with the idea of whether this person should set it up to, you know, get their apps done, get them in and set it up to take the test like right after applying and indicate as such, you know, in their application. That's always an option. It's not ideal, but, you know, a lot of these schools, if they really like what they're seeing, at minimum, they might end up waitlisting the person, and then you've got that second score coming, or in this case, a third score, I guess. But it's tough because I liked what I read about this candidate, although I did have one question for you. What's deep tech? Do you know what that is? I'm just bearing my ignorance for the audience here, but what does that mean, deep tech? Do you know?
Well, I think deep tech, fundamental tech, I don't know. I mean, these are great buzzwords, aren't they? They just make it sound like they're a little bit, they think a little bit harder than we have to.
Yeah, okay.
Sort of work that we do. But, you know, that does raise a great point, right? Just make sure that your application essays aren't full of jargon.
Yeah.
That, you know, the regular history major can understand or whatever. That would be very good. But also, you know, this candidate improved their GMAT, let's say, from, what was it, 630 to 710.
Right.
So I reckon there's room for improvement. If they'd have done, if they'd have scored 700 and improved it to 710, I'm like, you know, maybe you've reached your limit.
But then you know, yeah.
But until you've got two similar scores, you don't know if you've reached your limit, right? And I think your point is, or also could be, you say, well, split your apps, rounds one and round two, and plan to get that GMAT retaken
somewhere,
you know, maybe like you say, somewhere just after round one. But at the end of the day, I think there's a lot of potential here. quite the interesting candidate.
Yeah, I think.
I mean, and the other side, honestly, Graham, just to finish this conversation up, they have an idea for what they want to do post MBA. They have a product idea in terms of artificial intelligence doing good. So if they've really thought this through and can get really passionate about it, that really, again, adds a different level of color and flavor to the application.
Yeah, and I did, the only other thing I was going to say is I did realize that, you know, a school on their list that's a little less like GMAT centric, I found over the years, a really good school is INSEAD. And so, you know, they might get into INSEAD with the existing score, although it's a really different experience at INSEAD. You know, it's a short form, you know, kind of 1 year experience. And this is a younger candidate looking to do a little bit of a career shift. So I don't know, have to think about, you know, what makes sense. But anyway, I think a lot of good advice here. We should probably move on to the next candidate. But I did appreciate that person sharing their profile and their commentary on the podcast. So thanks for that. And hopefully the advice helps as they move through the admissions process this fall.
And thanks to Greg, the egg.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's move on and talk about Wiretap's candidate number two. So this person is looking at five schools, which include Columbia, Harvard, Stanford, Wharton, and Yale. Intake year of 2021, so starting in the next fall. And then they've been working in news media and education. And post-MBA career goal is also in media. GRE score of 329, GPA 3.36, 3 years of work experience, located in India as well, and mentions in the notes that they're LGBTQA. They're currently serving as a director of a leading Tamil newspaper, a television news channel, and radio station. And they also serve as the chairman of 8 rural colleges. They're committed to sustainable, socially equitable policies in the corporate sphere. And I wanted to turn this one right over to you because you had interaction with this candidate that revealed some other data on this person that I would have guessed. And that was about their undergraduate experience. So do you want to just talk a little bit about this candidate as we get into kind of picking apart the profile?
Yeah, they went to Penn and they'd like to go back to Wharton. I think that's shocking. Who would want to go to Wharton if you went to Penn? No, I'm kidding, right?
But I was shocked that they went to, I mean, just because when you read the profile, this person's working in India, they're in the kind of media sphere, and it didn't occur to me that they could have done their undergraduate in the U.S., which they did. So I thought that's interesting. But what else did you think about this person?
Yeah, super interesting. I mean, you're looking, this person has 3 years of work experience. They're chairman of 8 rural colleges, and they're director of a leading newspaper and a television news channel. You're like, how do you achieve all this stuff in 3 years? It's kind of crazy. But it's family business, right? So they're coming from a family business. They've obviously been provided great opportunities. So let's not beat around the bush. These are the sorts of opportunities that Joe Q Public doesn't get access to unless it's through a family business, right?
Right.
But I don't think you should discriminate against someone that's been provided great opportunities as long as they've run with them and done well with them, right? So it's not like, you know, they were handed some stuff and, you know, they just take it for granted and so on and so forth. I mean, it seems to me, well, actually, we don't really know that, but if they've been able to really develop well through these great opportunities they've been provided, then that's going to be a very good thing, mm-hmm. I think. And, you know, you can imagine, you know, they're chairman of 8 rural colleges and you know, this television news and so on and so forth. The conversations they can bring to their business school stuff are going to be pretty interesting and unique, I think, in terms of their ability to contribute.
Yeah.
So some really super interesting stuff here. And then you look at their goals and they want to stay there. You know, there's a lot of their careers in the media space. They want to stay in the media space. So you would imagine in the long run, they're going to go back and work in their family business and take it in an elevated direction or whatever it is. And I'm sure they explained it a little bit in on the Apply Wire conversation. But obviously in the short run, maybe work in a US firm for a couple of years to really learn some stuff, which again makes absolutely perfect sense. But my point is, in the long run, they're certainly not going to be a liability because they're going back to a great family business, one assumes, right? So from that perspective, some super interesting stuff here, I think.
Yeah.
The GPA is 3.36, so that's a little bit of their concern. It's a positive trajectory, and they were on the Dean's List the last couple of years, and I think their GRE is actually very good, 3.29.
Yeah.
So honestly, Graham, I think there's a lot to like here, and, you know, being a member of the LGBTQA community, I think that's very interesting in as much as how has that shaped who they are, mm-hmm. and how have they contributed to that community. So being within that community itself, I'm not saying is meaningless, but I mean it's more important to recognize and to understand how, you know, maybe they've had to overcome some circumstances and so on and so forth that other folks don't have to deal with, or maybe, like I said, they are now active contributors to that community in a mentor role or various other roles, whatever it might be.
Yeah, the more we talk about this candidate, the more I think this person is pretty compelling. I mean, I like the GRE is really, really strong. I'm actually not so worried about the GPA. I mean, it's from a good school, UPenn. There's an, as you said, upward trajectory,
yeah.
and the GRE kind of nails it home in terms of saying, look, I've got the smarts to excel academically. I also do like the fact that this person has international experience because they're Indian, working in India, in a somewhat unique industry in terms of media and entertainment. It's not something that we see all the time, but also that they went to school as an undergrad in the U.S. So they kind of get to mix in both worlds. And I was thinking about how does their LGBTQA status influence, or how has it influenced the way that they engage with their media business, right? Because it's possible that they're operating in a more conservative culture
right.
in India. And so, there might be interesting stories to tell there. So, overall, I like this candidate. I think, he or she, I don't think, did they say whether they are male or female? I don't think so. But have a, interesting set of target schools. They're all high quality. I think they're in the right ballpark. Like, I wouldn't say, you need a totally different set of target schools or anything like that.
Right.
I do think when it comes to media and entertainment, once you get out of the very top realm of schools like the Whartons and the Harvards and stuff, it makes sense to look in markets where there's going to be a lot of opportunity, whether that's, New York or LA. And I think you had actually maybe even suggested, what about, Stern and Anderson too?
Yeah.
I think of those schools as being a little bit easier to get into than Harvard and the likes, but I think could be a good idea if this person's really focused on that domain and wants to work in the US in that domain right out of business school. So, but again, I really like this candidate.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot to go with here.
Yeah, there's a lot to like here. I would say, and hopefully this goes without saying, but I'll say it anyway, but making sure they come across as a humble candidate, because clearly they've had massive opportunities in their life, which is great. I assume they've taken full advantage of it, which is terrific. They've learned a lot from it, and so on and so forth. But, what qualities that business schools really, really enjoys seeking out is, folks that are gracious for their opportunities, folks that remain humble despite all their successes, and, these sorts of things, make sure that they come through. And I would also say that, again, 3 years of work experience, despite the fact they're chairman of a bunch of schools and right. have done some terrific stuff, if they're not successful at what, the target schools they've listed, and I would, like you say, Stern and Anderson are in great markets, certainly for media and entertainment, then reapply the following year. Like, stick to your guns. Don't, again, drop your sights and any lower. There's no need.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds like you're in a great spot.
Mm-hmm.
So make sure that you continue to grow and succeed and do some really interesting stuff and reapply.
Yeah.
But I think this, like you say, this person should be going aiming high, much like the first candidate. In fact,
yeah.
quite like the third candidate too, but we haven't even talked about them yet.
All right, so let's move on. But the one thing I would say about this one before we do that is I think you go kind of M7 in the first round,
yeah.
or that list that they have is probably, round one, and then they could always mix in and match for round two if they are, really keen to go this year, like you're saying, and look at some of these schools that are a little bit lower in the rankings, but still very good for media and entertainment. So with that, thanks for that post. Best of luck to that candidate. Hope they're tuning in here. Let's talk about Wiretap's candidate number three. So this person is looking at five schools. They've got Harvard, MIT, Kellogg, UCLA Anderson, and Wharton on their list, and they want to start next fall. And they've been working in data analytics at an advertising agency, and they want to move into consumer goods post-MBA. Companies they mention are General Mills, Nike, PepsiCo, so some big brands. GRE score is 326, GPA 3.47. This person has 7 years of work experience. They're located in Chicago, and they don't really have a preference about where they land location-wise post-MBA. Obviously, we know they want to work in consumer goods and with a big brand. This person also in the notes was kind enough to say hello to us and to say that they found the podcast and the webinar series hugely helpful and appreciate all the content that we put out. She mentions that she's a woman based in Chicago, as I said, and that she studied history at a top 10 university and immediately moved into data and marketing. So she's had a number of different roles in that domain over the years. She also, and this was one of the things that was kind of discussed or that she wanted our feedback on, she's a huge Frisbee player, I presume Ultimate Frisbee, or you know the different kind of sports that come out of Frisbee, not just sort of tossing one around with friends. And she literally has like three different activities in this domain, so we can talk about that. But I wanted to just, what's your take on this candidate? I mean, it's kind of a non-traditional a little bit and interesting goals. But what do you think of this candidate and her chances?
Yeah, I mean, if this work experience is strong, and I suspect it is, coming out of a history major, I'm actually very impressed. You know, in terms of what she's been able to do now working in an ad agency. But I mean, see, I would imagine she's working a pretty analytical role for someone that's coming out of a history major. And so to me, there's some really interesting stuff here, Graham. I was impressed. I would question whether she would be smart to take like one of these onboarding programs, mm-hmm. getting ready for a top tier MBA. So my suggestion for her was to look into something like MBA Math or HBX, whatever that is currently called, yeah. and stuff like that. Because you know, while she's got, I mean, she seems like she's got a decent GRE, 326. I say decent for the very top schools. Her GPA is okay; it's 347. It's not outstanding, but it's okay. But it's probably not got a lot of quant in there. So I'd quite like to know what that quant score was on the GRE. And even if you know she feels that you know the quant score is good, and that it might just be better for a candidate like this to, you know, take one of these types of programs just to ease into that first semester of a top tier business school. Whereas, you know, and you can speak personally to this, it can be very quant heavy, front loaded, right? So that was my main concern. I mean, at the end of the day, this Frisbee stuff, you know, I love folk that are truly passionate about something, and she seems very passionate about whatever Frisbee community is. I don't really know I don't know much about that sport or about that interest, but anyone that's passionate about anything, I think that's a real bonus.
Yeah.
And it seems like she's done very well with it, right? So I'm not trying to trivialize it. So I like that aspect too. I think that can really play very well. And you would imagine, you know, she goes to, I think she should go to Stanford or something like that. I suggest maybe she should look at Stanford. That'd be very good. She can set up the Frisbee club at Stanford. Like, I'm sure the stuff you can do with this, right? At these schools to make an impact.
And I mean, in the US, Ultimate Frisbee is like a big, you know, college, like intramural type sport. And I think it's definitely, I think the American readers will know. I guess I did like the fact, like you were saying, like sometimes you get these sort of jack of all trades candidates who sort of dabble in like 10 different things. And at least this person, this woman is like really consistent. You know, she's, I think she mentioned she's literally
She's all in.
Yeah, I mean, she played in she college.
Says,
yeah,
yeah.
She's
on the. She says, "Does it look crazy to have three different ECs that are all related to frisbee?" I think no. I think having three ECs that are all related to one common theme is absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, and she mentioned that, you know, she coached a college women's team for 5 years, and they finished 13th in the nation during her last year of coaching. And she's currently captain of a club team, you know, that was 12th in the country in 2019. So she's got not only this hobby that she's consistent with, but it sounds like some leadership experience and results as a, you know, out of that. So I'm not worried about it. I mean, I'm assuming that there are some other things that she does, like she probably maybe has a couple of other interests and things that she does too. But I love the fact that, you know, her big time leadership and kind of community commitment is around one, you know, big thing instead of, you know, oh, I do this and that on the weekends. And, you know, there's not, we see a lot of candidates who literally have too many sort of things they're dabbling in.
And like you say, coaching, I mean, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
So go all in on it. Be passionate about it.
Yeah.
There'll be plenty of opportunity to write about this stuff in the business school essays. Like I say, I really do think her career is probably very good. She's going to get good support, I assume, from the Rex and stuff, and can show impact at that. She's worked a little bit longer than the average, which is, I think, is perfectly fine. But I do think she sets up to be a really strong candidate. I do also think that if there's any question on that quant side, take care of it now and aim for the very best schools.
Yeah, and I would say some schools on her list are going to be more open and interested in 7 years of experience as opposed to the usual, you know, 3, 4, 5. Then there are other schools that are a little more sensitive around that. But I think, yeah, she needs to show the quantitative ability, given that she was a history major. But again, the GRE is strong, went to a good school. And so hopefully, I don't know what her transcript has on it. I mean, it could be that she did take a few quant courses in college and did really well. But if she didn't, then yeah, that would be a big question mark.
Yeah.
But I like this candidate. And I think the only other thing I was going to mention, I believe you said it, is that, you know, given her interest in consumer packaged goods and some of these big brands, you know, for better or for worse, like a lot of the schools that are quite strong in that domain are the ones in the Midwest where some of these companies are headquartered. Yeah. And so you've got, you know, Kellogg on the list here. And other ones that come to mind are Ross and even Indiana. Mm-hmm. In terms of, if you look at the schools that place the most people with those types of CPG roles, you know, so I just wanted her to keep that in mind. I mean, I think she's got a lot of schools on the list, and you know, I recognize people don't have an infinite amount of time, but it is important to think about, like, looking at the career placement reports and sort of seeing where people end up. You mentioned Stanford. I think that makes sense too. I mean, obviously it depends where, like, sometimes it might depend on which company she really wants to work for. So if it's Nike, you know, then there's a good connection on the West Coast, right? So Stanford, or, you know, but I don't know. I mean, there are a lot of options here, and there are a lot of big CPG companies in the States. So I'm sure she'll land on her feet. But again, really interesting candidate, and I'm not worried about her big fear of being overly frisbeed out in her file. So I think she's good to go.
Again, yeah. I hope she doesn't think I was trivializing it at all. I think it's absolutely fantastic, and like you say, she's been a coach, successful coach. That's great leadership right there. Mm-hmm. She's been a captain, successful captain, which again is great leadership. Yeah. So fantastic.
And it requires fast-paced, you know, decision making, unlike say like cricket or something, you know, which would just
Come on now, Graham. We love our cricket. It's almost as exciting as baseball.
Yeah, yeah. but in any event, really appreciate this candidate sharing her profile and her comments on the webinar series, which has been a lot of fun, the Admissions Academy, and we'll keep we got a couple more classes in the academy to go. That's it for this week, Alex. Anything else you wanted to add before we say farewell to our listeners?
No, I just, you know, everyone stay safe. Thank you for listening, and best of luck, and we'll be back next week.
Yeah, sounds good. We'll see everyone in 1 week's time. Thanks again, Alex.
Cheers.